I'm Bae, and you're listening to Bae Baltimore, a weekly pop culture and society podcast recorded in a quiet neighborhood in Baltimore. Hey, you and me with allergies. So Boris Johnson resigned. That's interesting. Anyway, I'm going to talk about The Man from Toronto. I begrudgingly watched that, but it was interesting and it was cute. I still feel how I feel about Kevin Hart. He's a weirdo. And he makes movies that are similar to each other, but he always plays a similar type of character in his films. Like, it's not fresh or interesting, but this one, he's funny. You can't deny that he's funny. So anyway, I'll talk about that. But first, can we get back to Boris Johnson resigning? Many of the listeners to this show are from the United States, but some are from the UK and other places as well. And so I don't know much. I don't know much about all of this. I just know that him lying about COVID parties and this latest incident of one of his staffers or somebody in his cabinet like getting violent with other party members at this club, and him lying about it, or at least what the article that I read made it seem like he forgot, but like, you don't forget. He lied about connections. Oh, because even if you forget, there's always somebody to remind you, especially the more powerful you are, the less you have to remember because somebody's paid to remember for you. And so anyway, so he's been played for a minute. His leadership has been played for a minute. But like, I just want to go back to the fact that I don't know, again, I don't pretend to know a ton about UK politics, but I wonder if he benefited from Theresa May resigning. I'm wondering if that has anything to do with it. And the thing about it is, now the country has had two prime ministers in a row resign, which probably back in the 60s would have been hugely like scandalous, but like, we live in a world where it is what it is. And for Trump and Johnson to be top leadership of countries, leading countries at the same time. Like, I don't know if Johnson was exactly like Trump. Or nefarious like Trump and his regime and all the things that are happening here. But I definitely know that there were protests for Black Lives Matter in the UK, just like there were here following the myriad untimely deaths at the hands of police here. So I know that it's not all peaches and cream. Listening to Black British podcasters. What's the one that I listen to? Hold on. There's one that I listen to that I want to shout out because I think they're cool. Because they do something that's pretty awesome, which is they blend music with talking about pop culture and movies and things. And, oh, The Down Low. Literally, The Down Low, period. They're fun. I think they're pretty fun. With S and Beanie Abami. They're fun. Anyway, so I've been listening to them for a little bit. And before I was listening to them, I was listening to Not Another Book podcast, but that thing changed over like a lot. And to be honest with you, I hadn't listened to them in over like 2 years or something like that. But before they changed their format, and I guess people, it was really interesting, but it kept me abreast. I like to listen to them because it like helped me get a bigger, not a total picture of the diaspora, but definitely the diaspora in Western culture. a little bit. And so I feel like listening to the download kind of helps me get there. And there's another story from the download that I learned about that I will circle back to that just broke my heart a little bit, because I think there's ties to a, anyway, I'll talk about that in a minute. But no, like, there's something to be said about, and I don't quite catch the correlation other than conservatives thinking that, you know, they're gonna, riding on this wave of, hey, these liberals have just taken the country to hell, excuse me, in a handbasket. Let us take over, because for the decades that we were in leadership, things were great, right? Like, I don't remember if they made, well, Margaret Thatcher, the thing that I know about Margaret Thatcher is that even though she was the first woman prime minister in the UK, was it, I don't think it was Europe, but definitely in Britain, her reign, her leadership toward the end waned and people didn't like her. Like all the, well, not only did they not like her, it was more than that. It was literally a lack of confidence in her ability to govern, and the decision making from her party and so on and so forth. And so low approval ratings, and I can't remember if she was ousted or asked to resign or resigned. I can't remember that, but I definitely remember Theresa May. I remember, and this is just the rough, just like a little rough thing for folks who are from the United States. You probably remember this too, but was it 2019, 2018, something like that? When Brexit, that whole conversation, it's like Brexit happened. The Brexit conversation began and it was awful. And Trump was in power. Trump was president here. And we were like, oh, this is gross. And over in the UK, a lot of Black British, Black, just people in the diaspora in the UK were like, ooh, this is gross too. Because it passed. And I know that leaving the European Union is a big deal for a lot of different things, because it will make things difficult. And what I understood was that it would make things difficult for poor people and, of course, people of color in the UK. But just generally, it wasn't a good idea, but it passed. And then Theresa May's goal in her government was to get Brexit to make the deal happen, and it never did happen. And as a result, she lost a lot of favor and was forced to resign. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, she's the first prime minister to resign on post since Margaret Thatcher. So I guess she did resign, which was pretty crappy. And I can remember Angela Merkel, the German prime minister, was embattled as well. It was like a really rough time for not conservative, but liberal, I guess, because I don't even know if you would consider Angela Merkel liberal, or even Theresa May liberal herself. But like, it was a rough time for it, because I mean, let's be for real, like, Trump got in office. What was I trying to say? Let me finish my thought. It felt like it was a rough time globally in Western cultures for liberal presidents or liberal leaders of countries. And so, or at least some Western liberal leaders of countries. And anyway, so because you have Obama coming out of office after his second term, but the country feeling like I don't want to revisit this because it was pretty painful, even though, you know, I was a part of the group who was like, this might not end well, because there's a sea change happened. It feels like a sea change. And it certainly was. And then we usher in this whole period of pseudo-conservatism that's just really blanketed as racism by any other name, and opportunism. Anyway, so, you know, here comes Trump and doing Trump stuff immediately, and all of his people immediately, arguably, more devastating policies in place than Bush Cheney. And that fiasco and that his second term, first term, second term for sure. But anyway, so Trump is in office doing wild stuff. The United States is going through for the next 4 years, and actually the thing is probably going to be going through for the next 20, let's be for real, based on all the decisions that were made during Trump's tenure. And then I read some dumb article that's come out now that the country is in uproar about the overturning of Roe v. Wade to say that Trump was going to appoint a liberal justice over the woman whose name I can't remember right now. Can't call her name anyway. Before Ketanji, the person that was actually the before that broy dude, that like an old broy dude that was appointed, whose name I can't remember. The woman was it broy dude and then the woman? And then Justice Brown, Jackson Brown. I can't remember the order, but anyway, he was before the woman, whatever the conservative woman that he ultimately appointed. There's an article out now saying that he was going to appoint a liberal, pro-abortion justice. And I'm like, red herring, nobody cares. Like, get to the business of supporting poor people's health. Get back to the business of that. I don't care. Anyway, so his legacy is going to be far-reaching and painful for the United States. And so it felt like he was also helping to usher in, like, there wasn't it. I remember while he was, after he became president, actually to get him to become president, other than the Russian bots, there were people, conservatives from the UK coming and helping his cause. And so they go back on a high horse to the UK, and I guess they're on a tear to get rid of May or something like that. I can't remember when Theresa May resigned and Boris Johnson stepped in, but it was relative to Trump's 2018 presidential campaign win. I can't remember the timeline on that, but I don't think Boris Johnson stepped in too late. And the first thing that I thought of was, boy, both of these people look like disasters for their country. And turns out, just poor policies. I don't know that Boris Johnson was as bad or his policies as nefarious as Trump's and his administration, but I'm eager to learn, because I'm quite sure all is not what it seems. It on the surface of it, it seemed like he was okay. He was just a bit of a bro and a little bit trifling and a puppet. And also, cut your hair, but whatever. Like, your hair does not make you or break you as a person, but your policies do. And I don't know much about his policies, except that he was conservative and at least on the surface of it, he finished what, it's not on the surface of it. It is a fact. He finished what Theresa May and her party could not do, which was to get a deal secure some sort of plan for the UK to leave, to follow through with what the the British people wanted, which was for them to leave the European Union. And so I think within a couple of years of him stepping into the prime minister role, his party was able to get that done, largely because they had a majority, like a super majority or some junk like that, of leadership. And so they were able to get that done. And so he was riding high, and then COVID, and then restrictions, and then weirdness, and then rumors of parties that plagued him up until this point. as I mentioned earlier, but that his real downfall was a series. It wasn't one scandal. It was a series of scandals. And what I just read was that although he survived a no confidence vote, the fact that your own party had enough steam to even put it to a vote is a loss enough, which makes total sense. Like, yeah, you survived the no confidence vote, but like, the fact that you had to get a vote in the first place, and the fact that enough people, whether you won, but like a lot of people, but I don't know that it was a barely won situation, but he won. But the fact remains that a lot of folks were just like, nah. A lot of leadership were just like, nah, in his own party, which is a bad thing for anyone trying to act like a tough leader who you should stand behind and depend on. And I don't know how long prime minister terms are, but I can't remember if he said he was going to run again. Because again, when you are in leadership, you don't have to have a long memory. You don't have to be even the most savvy political animal. You have people who can be that for you. And so they saw blood in the water. He been knew his time was up. But I wonder what made him hold on so long. Because again, from the start of the pandemic, well, maybe not the start of the pandemic, but like midway through, but definitely all of 2021, he was plagued by one scandal after another. And then slow trickle into 2022, where we led to this point where the final blow was him acting as if it was him being caught, knowing more information about someone who should have been punished before for his actions and resigned for his actions, reputable, anyway, his actions, I forgot the R word I was trying to use. Anyway, for his actions in this private club where it's alleged that he beat some people up or he abused some people in some way in this private club, as entitled people are wont to do, and expecting to get away with it. But he knew about it and all that stuff. And he just feels like he never did feel like the... I guess images mean something. And while you can look one way and then be a totally opposite person, he just never looked like he was super politically savvy. It looked like he was just playing a role. And I had read that he had wanted to be a prime minister since he was a child. Well, everybody want to be president. Everybody want to be leader because it's a fun thing to do. It seems fun. That's not endearing. That doesn't mean anything. It shouldn't mean much to anyone, because if you wanted to be president, well, no, not if you wanted to be president, but or prime minister. I guess what I want to say is you wanting to be prime minister is not the thing that should endear people to you. The thing that should endear people to you and then make them feel bad about this whole thing is the fact that you stepped into this role not knowing exactly what you were getting yourself into, thinking that you were just going to have a team of people around you, perhaps have a team of people around you that were going to keep you afloat. You were going to come in like the good guy. And pause parenthetically here, just real quickly. One of the things that did not help him was his immediate support. One of the things that did not help him, which in any other, under any other circumstance would have made him a hero in the public eye, especially to his party, would have been him jumping to the aid of the Ukraine and the Ukrainian president. But what that ended up doing was making people think it was a wag the dog sort of scenario, where he's like, where other U.S. presidents have, actually every single leader of a government has been accused of engaging in a war or directing funds and attention to a war to take the attention off of scandals that are aimed at them. Age old, when I was first politically aware, I remember people saying that the Gulf War was a distraction that Clinton used to get people to look away from the Monica Lewinsky piece or other things that he was dealing with, other scandals that he was dealing with, that the Gulf War was a great... No, the Gulf War wasn't. The Gulf War was Bush, number one. Bush Senior, not... anyway, there was some other conflict that Clinton was alleged to use as a distraction from the scandals that his administration was embroiled in. Anyway, and so a similar claim was launched against Johnson as it relates to his support for the Ukraine, which on the surface of it doesn't seem totally fair, but at the same time, it was probably true that he was just trying to deflect, while also doing something that felt like a good thing. Anyway, boy, what a roller coaster ride. Dude's last year and a half has just been rough. And especially how humiliating is this? You take over. He wasn't even elected the first time. He takes over as prime minister from Theresa May, who has just been ousted, who has been driven to be ousted by resigning. Because she lost a no confidence. I think, did she lose a no confidence? I can't remember. But anyway, she resigned. And he comes in flying high, acting like a great white hope. And then he didn't even finish out his term. He gets properly elected in the fall. He takes over Theresa May's position and then gets properly elected in the fall of that same year, but doesn't even finish out his own term because his career or his time as prime minister ends in scandal and he has to resign. That must be a low feeling. You know what I mean? How pitiful do you have to be feeling about yourself right now? Can't be great. And then as a country, you're just looking back and you're like, dang, two prime ministers. But on the one hand, it's kind of how the thing goes. Things are different now. Like, what was is no more. Our political parties and the way our approach to politics, also our approach to governing, is just different. And what we know is that, by and large, what we've always known, but maybe we were just not as a people aware of, and I know I'm blending British folks with American folks, but like they're super similar in a lot of different ways. A lot of the conservative, the underpinnings of racism exist in the conservative party in both countries, plagued with similar issues in a lot of different ways. And so anyway, how freaking scandalous, about as scandalous as our government. I don't know why the Supreme Court exists. It is propped up to be this holy non-political court that is totally not holy and not sacred and is totally bipartisan. Like, I don't know why anybody, like, what a great PR campaign. What a wonderful PR campaign. The Supreme Court is less than 100 years old. I believe it was established in the 1920s or something like that. Man, no, that's not true. When was the Supreme Court established? I'm done talking about Boris Johnson because I don't know enough other than it's a big deal for a sitting country leader to resign. That's a big freaking deal. And it deserves some talking about. And it'll be interesting who takes over, because I don't know what the secession part is about, because I know in the United States, if a president has to resign, their whole administration doesn't have to resign. The next person up takes over, which is the vice president. I don't know what the case is in the UK, but I also know that a single party doesn't just win unless they have an overwhelming support. And so what ends up happening is coalition governments are formed all the time. So I don't know if Boris Johnson had a vice. I don't know if there is a vice PM, prime minister. I don't know that sort of setup, but I know Boris Johnson, Boris Johnson was in a different party than Theresa May, I believe. So I don't know how that came about, but I imagine there's the wheels of justice are turning just now in the UK, and a new prime minister will step up soon, because it was literally just announced at the time I'm speaking about this. It was literally just announced that he resigned, that Boris Johnson resigned following like a year and a half worth of just solid scandals. But that he's trying to stay on as interim, I guess. That's the best way I can describe it. He's trying to stay on as interim prime minister until the fall. Which signals that probably they don't have an apparent successor in his place. But anyway, this will be fodder for the news cycles for a little while now. Because again, it's a big deal for a leader of a country to resign. It's like a big deal. So anyway, be watching that. But anyway, let me get back to the Supreme Court because this has just been on me. When was the Supreme Court established? I'm not the only one asking the question. 1789. Okay, I'm a liar. 1789. So this thing has been around for more than 300, almost 300. Well, not even almost 300 years. 200 and a half years. Wait a minute. Can I even count? No. 1889, 100. 1989, 200. So we're about halfway through, not even halfway through. We're 200 and some odd years from its establishment. But I definitely remember that in the early days, certainly around the 1800s when the country was forming. No, after the country was formed. In the 1800s time frame, there was a struggle for the court to gain legitimacy. When and why was the Supreme Court created? Congress first exercised this power of the Judiciary Act of 1789. The act created a Supreme Court with six justices. It also established a lower federal court. We understand the why, because there needed to be some sort of referees, for lack of a better term, to be able to help govern, help the country actually call balls and strikes. So not umpires calling balls and strikes, helping to set kind of measures and standards. But there are no measures and standards being set these days. Like, it doesn't really feel like, literally, everybody's talking about the fact that Roe v. Wade was overturned. Many people are missing that it is now harder because of the current Supremes, Ketanji Brown Jackson, who just got sworn in following, was it Bayer? Another judge's resignation, whose name I cannot remember. But a liberal judge who resigned, which Ketanji is I think she's a liberal moderate or some junk like that. Anyway, she's taking their place. Like, that was what was supposed to happen. That was why she was able to be nominated in the first place, because he was about to retire. And so he retires and then the very next day, Ketanji is officially sworn in. And anyway, so, like, I understand there's balls and strikes being called, but what's happening now is this is some personal stuff. It's not jurisprudence. This is some personal opinion. So while Roe v. Wade was overturned, and we'll see what the fate of that is in the next decade, because I don't have any confidence that anything positive is going to happen within the next couple of years. And maybe I'm just being a catastrophist, but it just doesn't feel like we're headed in a direction where there's even a political will to do anything but to save your own hive. General elections are in the fall. This is the Senate and the House, state Senate and state House, and the legislature. These local elections are where it matters, and I wonder if there's going to be a sea change again into more conservative, leaning more conservative. It feels like that's coming. But anyway, I just wish there were more parties in the U.S. because I wonder if things would be run a little bit differently. I don't know. I don't have anything to compare it to other than the U.K. and thinking that all of those different governments have to come together, because all of those different people don't necessarily totally align with each other. They align with their own parties and they figure it out. They make it happen. And I'm wondering if that, I'm not wondering by myself, and I'm not the first person to ever wonder this, but I'm wondering if the United States could benefit from something like that. But anyway, let me get to the other piece that you should have heard by now. If you're from the United States, or even if you're not, you should have heard this by now. Behind Roe v. Wade, the other thing that they did was made it harder for defendants, people who are detained by the police, to sue the police if the Miranda wasn't properly given, their Miranda rights weren't properly given to them. It's harder. You still have the rights that Miranda afford, but it's now harder for you if you are unlawfully detained by the police, but your Miranda rights were violated. It's a hell of a lot harder now to go after the police officers who are in charge of reading you, you're administering the Miranda rights and upholding them. And increasingly, I'm reminded of a story. It was an old story. I flew home this weekend hubby and I flew back to Missouri for a family reunion. And I'll say some more about that in a minute. But I was going to talk about some other things, but it's lasting a long time now, this conversation. But I really want to get this out. So I went home. We flew home and I'm doing the genealogy, our genealogy. And I'm saying all of this to say our family tree goes back several generations. We're fortunate that I've gone so far back now that I've found, which is remarkable for Black Americans, that I found my third great grandfather served as a Union soldier in the Civil War. Commissioned and everything. Unfortunately, died of an illness from Kansas City, or I don't know if he was from Kansas City, but definitely had a residence in Kansas, not Kansas City, Kansas, but residence in Wichita, Salina, Kansas. Was it Hutchinson? Anyway, it was one of those cities. I can't remember right now. But anyway, had three sons at the time of his enlistment, goes to Tennessee, gets sick in Tennessee, and dies. I don't know if he sees combat. I don't know any of that. What I know is that he goes to Tennessee and he enlists in 1865, and by 1866, he's dead of a stomach illness. That's how it was labeled on his certificate. I have to dig more into it. And then his wife, out of necessity, remarries in 1866 and begins having children with her new husband, who's a minister from Virginia. And I'm saying all of this to say that this whole time, why things matter is because the rights that were afforded to my third great grandfather and my third great grandmother weren't many to begin with. A whole civil war arguably was fought whether or not either side truly believed. And again, if you do your research, you know that even on the Union side in leadership, even the beloved Abraham Lincoln didn't truly support the end of slavery for the reasons why we would like to think that he supported the end of slavery. I know there's some arguments there, but there's plenty enough evidence and the time frame. Lincoln wasn't a Quaker that he would have some sort of high moral standard that made truly all men equal in his mind. I don't believe that for a second, and nor should you. It felt like a political move. What we know is that he was politically savvy. And so this was a politically savvy move. And so regardless of what the Daughters of the Revolution or the Civil War or whatever would like you to believe, it was not over states' rights. It was over slavery. And not even for the same reason for everybody. But nevertheless, while slavery ended, it just started a new wave or a new period of cruelty to Black Americans. And just thinking through the years, all the ways that Black folks suffered and just continued to suffer because of lack of access two resources and all the firsts that we experienced at the expense, blood, sweat, and tears of the people that came before them, only to now come to a place where we have two justices that sit on the court, two black justices that sit on the court at this moment in time, one of which has done more, is so deeply conservative, so deeply identifies or aligns with policies and practices that are in many instances seem very anti-poor, which ultimately ends up being anti-people of color, black and brown people specifically, who represent large swaths of people who are impacted by these policies that ultimately impact poor people. It's shameful for him to be sitting on the bench, but he does. It's shameful for how he got there, but he did. Anita Ben knew, but we didn't listen. And by we, I mean people in leadership. There is no we. And I guess just sitting here thinking of the things that they did support versus the things that they did not support, it just feels so damn arbitrary. And I keep cussing, I apologize. It seems, this is my point. It feels like the last 200 years have been a constant struggle for one reason or the next, fighting for basic rights for one reason or the next, for black people specifically. And it feels like because of someone's religious beliefs that, quite frankly, again, having a whole other conversation another time, are completely, so completely warped. Your religious beliefs so completely warped by your, like, actually confusing patriotism with Christianity, with religion, which everybody who's not, whose head is not in the sand, understands that there's a real problem with conflating religiosity and patriotism. And religiosity is a nasty word to me too, because again, it seems very impersonal and very procedural, which is what it is. And it's how it's performed in many ways. But there's something about Clarence Thomas that gets under my skin, and it's much more than that old adage or that old phrase that a lot of black folks use, that he's just out here shucking and jiving. It's more than that. It feels more nefarious than that. Because shucking and jiving sounds harmless, right? But making your opinions known as the supreme, which I thought was taboo, which again, we're in a new time, so it's not taboo. And he's just letting, he and his wife, who was wanting to be a part of or support the insurrection on January 6th, they're saying the quiet part loud. And this is a wild time in the United States. I think it's a wild time politically for Western cultures. Western countries at the moment. It's a wild time. But to assume that, never mind, I was going somewhere else. But I think this is just a wild time, and I'm curious to see what the end will be. But the decisions of the last couple of years will definitely impact the United States for sure. Well, actually, the UK as well, because Brexit was a big thing. The decisions of the last 2-3 years will have far-reaching consequences in the next 20, and I wonder what that will mean. I wonder what that will mean, because it doesn't feel like it will be something good, and I'm so very tired of people just saying, oh, well, vote liberal, vote Democrat, as if voting Democrat has done anything. But at the same time, Republican Party ain't never had anything for me. Ain't never had anything for people who look like me, unless my checkbook looked a certain way, at least unless the balance in my account was a certain amount. And so I'm just in a place where I'm just like, wow, this is a wild time. And I wonder what the end will be. And unfortunately, we're just going to have to wait and see what the general elections hold, what the general elections yield. It's going to be wild for sure. And I know one thing. Let me just switch it for a second. I know one thing. I know Larry Hogan. Baby. I don't need to see him in no sort of political cabinet anymore. I mean to tell you, he gonna relax gun laws in Maryland for what? So it can become the Wild Wild West? So the gun incidence rate in the state can soar? What a weirdo. This guy is wild. But out here acting like, anyway, that he got his, ever since the red line, I've been eyeballing him. I'm Baltimorean at this point. I've been here for 13, 14 years. And I've been eyeballing him since he won the governorship the first time. And I just don't know what we want here. Like, one good deed does not outweigh his handling of the COVID crisis in the beginning, does not outweigh all the other bad policies that he's placed forth. All the weird statements, all the grandstanding, and certainly political posturing to get in some sort of someone's presidential candidate or cabinet, if not become a candidate, if not vie for the presidency himself, which I would not put it past him to do. He sucks. He sucks big time. Yikes. Anyway, what did I want to say? Yeah, I think I've rambled enough. It's just an interesting political. I woke up to this morning, an interesting political story. Series of stories. So again, this has just been a wild couple of weeks, and it seems like it's going to continue to do that. So I'll be watching, I'll be reading, and we'll just put one foot in front of the other because that's what we got to do, dears. Anyway, let me switch gears and talk about something that's funny and dumb at the same time, which is the man from Toronto. Again, I struggled to watch this thing because it's a Kevin Hart film. And I ain't been right with Kevin Hart since the whole in-your-face separation and weirdness with his wife, his former wife, Tori. Like, I saw her, I saw her at her stand-up when she came to the comedy club here in Baltimore, maybe two years ago. And it was weird because her whole set essentially revolved around being Kevin Hart's ex-wife, which if that's your identity, baby, you need to do some soul searching and find you, because that's not much of an identity. But nevertheless, this was the time where the scandal about Kevin Hart cheating again came out. And I don't know. I think I stopped paying attention to his art because it just seemed like the veneer had worn off, the varnish had worn off, and it's just like a regular person. And the jokes that he's telling aren't that innovative anymore. I don't know. I think I peeked behind the veil and lost interest. How about that? And so I just vowed not to participate in any of the formulaic movies that he was coming up with, because let's be for real, y'all, Kevin Hart, I'm gonna just say this and then I'm gonna pause it and I'm gonna move to the break and then I'm gonna just talk right into the film. But literally, I don't know, that might not be true, but Kevin Hart essentially plays a guy from Philly. A down on your luck guy from Philly that's got a lot of ambition and a lot of dream. And if somebody just gives him a chance, he could turn this thing out. Meanwhile, he's an underdog who always gets paired with some sort of efficient, proficient, tough guy who ends up teaching him a thing or two. Did I not just give you the plot for his last 10 films? I know I did. Anyway. But nevertheless, this one was a little bit cute and it was funny, in parts. if not still completely formulaic, so I'm going to talk about it. And I might slip some other references in there too, but I'm mostly going to be talking about The Man from Toronto. So in the next little piece, it's all about The Man from Toronto. Before I get into the nitty gritty, I just want to say thank you so much for listening. If you are new to the show, I ramble a lot sometimes. I talk about political things a lot. I end up talking about pop culture things as well. But then I also typically talk about movies a lot because that's my thing. I watch a lot of movies. And so this is a typical episode. Nothing too different. So thank you so much for listening. If this is not your cup of tea, all right. Appreciate you, fam. See you never, I guess. But if this is your cup of tea, thank you for hanging out. All right. So let me get into the review. All right. So The Man from Toronto. I'm going to just try to push forward. Okay, so The Man from Toronto, 2022 film, action comedy is the genre that it's in. It's an hour and 52 minutes. I will say that you don't feel the hour and 52 minutes, although when I tried to watch it, I was dog tired. So I had to watch it over 2 days because I kept falling asleep. Not because the movie was not interesting. It's just I was tired from all the travel and stuff like that. The plot, well, let me just say this. So it's 5.7 out of 10 on IMDb, 23% Rotten Tomatoes. Wow, that's a lower score than I thought. 2.5 from out of Common Sense Media. I don't know who the heck that is, but let's dig into, well, and 73% of Google users like this film, which I am one, even though it's completely formulaic, I am one. All right. The plot, a New York City screw-up named Teddy, who is mistaken for the man from Toronto. The plot follows a New York City screw-up named Teddy, who is mistaken. There needed to be a comma there. Who is mistaken for the man from Toronto, in quotations, when the two wind up in the same Airbnb. Antics ensue. Okay, well, this description is terrible. It was released June 24th, so it's been out a heck of a lot longer than I expected. Well, no, it's not. No, it hasn't. It's only been out for a couple of weeks, for 2 weeks. Directed by Patrick Hughes, starring Kevin Hart, Woody Harrelson, who has an interesting story. His dad was accused of being a serial killer, I think, at one point. Like, that was wild. It's like he didn't grow up with his father, but he stood beside him. Or some junk like that. He grew up in Texas, and this person who was allegedly a criminal, but like someone who killed people, was from Texas as well. And this, I believe the scandal was around in Texas. Anyhow, like Woody Harrelson came out in his like 30s or something like that, like in the 90s. I don't know if he was 30 in the 90s, but whatever. And like stood beside him and like was, I don't know, like it was something weird with him. Google Woody Harrelson and Google Woody Harrelson and see if that story comes up, because I definitely remember in like the late 90s learning of him like supporting this man who was accused of killing some people, and thinking that that man was his father. I don't know. Anyway, I just remember there's something weird about him. But I've always kind of enjoyed him as an actor because he seemed fun. The characters he played seemed interesting. Seemed like a actor that didn't mind taking risks. Yeah, so he's in this. Kaylee Cuoco, who I don't know who that is. I guess I'm supposed to know who that is. Jasmine Matthews, don't know who that is, but she's, hold on, let me look on. Who the heck is, nope. Oh. Juan, is it Jen Carlos? I don't know how you say his name, but Jen Carlos Canela. He all right.
He's supposed to be a hunk in this movie. He's all right. But what I wanted to look up was Jasmine Matthews, and it keeps going to him. Okay, Jasmine Matthews. Girl, I don't know anything about this woman other than she a little bit light skinned and got a relaxed curl pattern. She was in The Heathers, The Tomorrow War, which I will never see because it's got Chris Pratt in it and I don't like him. I don't know anything about her. Okay. She's pretty. All right, moving on. And then Layla Lauren, who I don't know. Pearson Foday, who I also don't know. I already told you about Giancarlo Canela, who's, he all right. He cute, I guess. No, he's cute. And then Ellen Barkin, who I remember from Ken. I remember Ellen Barkin from a bunch of movies, but I mostly remember her. I remember her in Ocean's, is it 12? She's in Ocean's 12, but I definitely remember Ellen Barkin from Ken, the movie starring Patrick Swayze, where I remember watching it because Mama liked to watch it a lot, but it was this quote-unquote Cajun person, which, by the way, let me pause. I thought I heard something that said that every Cajun person is Creole, but every Creole person is Cajun, but not every Cajun person is Creole. And I think that directly has a reference to their connection to Blackness and why some people are furious by cinematic portrayals of people in the low country of Louisiana, because it feels like erasure of Blackness and Black folks. Which is to say that Cajuns who are from a certain part of Canada, French Canada, who moved down to Louisiana through a number of different the times where the area changed hands between the Spanish and the French, they are predominantly white, and Cajuns, yeah, they're predominantly white, but Creole is includes a number of different ethnicities, but African is a dominant ethnicity. African American is a dominant trait, and that some, again, part of the ethnicity can be Creole or can be Cajun, which makes Creole, which means that Creoles can be Cajun, but Cajuns can't be Creoles because of that ethnic difference. And so anyway, this the movie Ken was one of those erasures of Black of Black Creoles and making it Cajun, because it was literally Patrick Swayze playing a country Cajun that has moved to the big city and it's based in New Orleans, in and around New Orleans, to be honest with you. But that his little brother, the whole plot of the thing is his little brother moves to some urban city and is murdered. And so, or am I thinking Ken, or am I thinking Big Easy? Daggone it. I'm thinking Big Easy. Forget Ken. Although, watch Ken because it's interesting. It's got Patrick Swayze in it. But I'm thinking Big Easy. The Big Easy has... Oh, what's that man's name? Hold on. Googling. The Big Easy. The Big Easy. That's set. It's a 1986 film that stars Ellen Barkin. I did watch it. I did appreciate it. It stars Ellen Barkin, a colorful drama set in New Orleans about the relationship which develops between a young police lieutenant. Who is the guy? Dennis Quaid. It's Dennis Quaid. Dennis Quaid and an uncompromising female DA. She was very compromised several times in that film, which is ironic. But anyway, she's supposed to be a city slicker and he's supposed to be a country Cajun. And that's the thing that's erasing Blackness. The only time Blackness is ever mentioned or ever put in the film is in service to the white characters, which is a trope that we're used to in American film at this point, film and TV at this point. But that is a big movie that had huge Creole erasure. And it was all about Cajun this and Cajun that. But like, where'd you get your swagger? And it certainly wasn't from you. Anyway, but anyway, I remember Ellen Barkin from that movie because I must have watched it like a million times because my mama recorded it on VHS. And this was the time before cable, and mama and daddy was not going to give me no movie money. And I certainly didn't have movie money. So I would just rewatch. This is why I'm a documentary buff, because I would watch reruns of 80s films that my sister and my brother that lived with me taped on TV, which is why I watched Solar Babies. I watched that, Mad Max, all of the Mad Maxes, Legend, The Big Easy, and there's one more. Kim and the Holograms, the original Ghostbusters, the one with the ape, with the backpack and the sun hat and the cargo shorts. That Ghostbusters, you know what I'm talking about. I watched that a lot, and then I watched PBS a lot, which is where I watched Ghost Riders and all those documentaries that I probably shouldn't have been watching, but like nobody was checking me because I was being quiet and I wasn't getting into trouble. Anyway, that's how I know all of these films. There's some other films that I watched ad nauseum too. I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker. I can't tell you how many times I watched that. The Color Purple, please. I knew that thing frontwards and backwards before I was 13. Anyway, and I shouldn't have, but who cares? Anyway, I've grown over the years to have a love-hate relationship for that film, but I did appreciate it for what it was, because at least it showcased Black culture, Creole culture, Louisiana culture, specifically New Orleans culture, a little bit in film, even though it was whitewashed and watered down. But nevertheless, that's why I remember Ellen Barkin. And then the next time I remember seeing her, I'm sure she was in myriad other projects, but the next time I remember seeing her was in Ocean's 12, I think. Anyway, so that's the cast. There are other people in it, but that's the cast. Literally, the plot, I'm going to do a better job of explaining this plot. So they say in New York City, but dude lives in Pennsylvania. So I'm confused. Why is he supposed to be a New York screw up? Where is New York? I have no idea. I didn't even get that he was supposed to be out of New York. You know what I got? That he was in some Pennsylvania town. Mind you, Pennsylvania does border New York. But like, he looked like he was from Philly. It sounded like the little town was like something like Allentown or some town that was not close to Philly, but not super far either. You know what I mean? Like one of those little sleepy towns. He looked like he was from one of them. He did not look like he was from New York City. The city that he was even... Anyway, I'm not talking about that anymore. But here's the plot. Kevin Hart plays Teddy Nelson. Teddy Nelson, who is a down-on-your-luck everyman who just has a great idea, is full of great ideas, but never can quite land any of those ideas. He works as the marketing director for a local gym, but he has been working there. In the time that he's been working there, he's not really been able to generate a lot of business for the gym, but instead, he spent a lot of time perfecting his next latest, greatest pitch while also putting out flyers, spending a lot of money on flyers for the gym, and they haven't been helpful. He has a doting wife who has some sort of high-paying job, who loves him and really supports him, but her patience is wearing thin because he louses things up a lot, so much so that everybody in her office calls him, like when they mess up, they said, oh, don't Teddy this. Don't mess these things up, because apparently she just goes to work and talks about how trifling he is at work. And so he's a down on your luck man. He's just trying to, you know, win. He just needs a win. So he just needs a big break. So this particular weekend, it's his wife's birthday, and he's not going to teddy things up. No. He's not going to have his wife going back to work on Monday, talking about how he messed things up yet again for my birthday. And so anyway, he sets up this opportunity for them to go away to some other little sleepy town, to get in an Airbnb in this little country oasis. Again, they're already in the country, in like a little suburban little town, but they go further into Pennsylvania to get away, and they rent this cabin. But before they get to the cabin, because Ted has made all the arrangements, he's going to do good this time. So he drops his wife off at the spa, and then he goes to find this cabin. And the whole running joke is that he has low toner in his printer, and so he printed off the directions. He printed off the address and the confirmation to the Airbnb, and he uses that to drive to find the house. Now, let's just stop right here and talk about how ridiculous that is. Who prints off confirmations to Airbnbs anymore? Or at the very least, who solely relies on confirmations to Airbnbs? What do we know? Airbnb will text you, baby. Airbnb emails you. Airbnb has all your contact information. You can literally, everybody has a smartphone these days. You can literally log into your Airbnb account and look up the confirmation from your phone. But no. He doesn't do that. And so here starts the beginning of the whole film, where he is beginning to be mistaken for the man from Toronto, which is an assassin. He's like a hired gun. And then we learn throughout the process of this film that there are several hired guns that are not known by their government name. They are known by the city that they come from, and all of them are men. But this network of hired guns is run by a woman. Played by Ellen Barkin. I keep wanting to call her Barker, but Barkin, who's called the handler. Anyway, so let me take a step back and let me read the Rotten Tomatoes review, why Rotten Tomatoes gave it a 23% out of 100. So The Man from Toronto, again, released June 24th, it's got 23% on the tomato meters after 60 reviews from critics. And has gotten 41%, which is still not fresh. The popcorn container is tilted over. The audience score of 41%, that's from 250 plus ratings. Critics' consensus: The Man from Toronto has a crackerjack premise and a fine pair of stars, but this toothless comedy mismatches its promising elements and winds up neither funny or thrilling. Yeah, that about sums it up. That about sums it up in a nutshell. Even though I thought it was funny in parts, because Kevin Hart is funny in parts. But it's actually, that was a pretty harsh critique. I don't think it's a terrible film. I think it's a Netflix film. I think if it went to the box office, it would not have recouped its money. But the thing about Netflix is you never know how much money these films make. What we know is that the budget for this film was $75 million. I doubt very seriously that it would even make up half of that if it was released in theaters. However, it's like top 10 in Netflix right now. So I imagine they're making some money, even though it's not good. And like I said, it's got 5.7 on IMDb. 41%. Is the audience rating from Rotten Tomato. That's after 250 plus reviews. 41% is about the best you're going to be able to do with this film. And so, yeah, that just signals to the problems that it has. And I already told you, like, the premise is similar to many other movies that Kevin Hart made as, portraying the down on your luck everyman from Philly. even though he's supposed to be from New York City here, he's definitely from Philly here. Anyway, I think the thing that for me saves it is Woody Harrelson. I think Woody Harrelson in a lot of ways saves it. He saves it to being an okay film. That's it. There's not really anything spectacular about this thing. But it's just interesting. All right, so let me keep going. So I've given you the plot. It's a case of mistaken identity. He's mistaken. So here's the thing. Here's the thing about the low toner. The running joke is low toner set this whole thing off. And so what's the whole thing? Him being mistaken for the man from Toronto who's an assassin. He is going after dropping off his wife. After dropping off his wife at the spa, he goes to try to find this house in the country. And in reading the address, which again, all he had to do was get confirmation on his phone. But of course, the movie would have been over. It wouldn't have been called The Man from Toronto. It would have been called The Man from Philly Takes His Wife to the Country in Pennsylvania and Has a Nice Weekend for Her Birthday. And so, because it wasn't that, we get Man from Toronto. And so he ends up going to the wrong house, which again, on the confirmation, there should have been a number that he called to get confirmation on the number, the right number of the house. Like, even if it wasn't clear on his paper, you know what he could have done? Called the Airbnb owner and got the actual address, but he didn't do that. So he walks in the house, he takes all of his stuff in, and while he's getting ready to walk in the house and take all of his stuff in, there is these ne'er-do-wells who are standing at the door, one of which takes a picture of him because nobody's ever seen the man from Toronto. And they think they're seeing him for the first time. And so they take a picture. They want to commemorate the moment, these ne'er-do-wells. And so they take a picture of him while he's getting out of the car with all the stuff for this wild weekend that he's going to have with his wife for her birthday. Pause. If you're not sending your significant other to do things that they want to do on their birthday, kind of feels a little bit selfish. This whole little thing, like, he takes her away for a wild weekend. And while the spa is definitely something she wants to do, the cabin, I don't know. I'm overdoing it. Anyway, let me keep going. So he ends up going into the home, runs into these ne'er-do-wells who he still doesn't understand. He thinks are the Airbnb owners. They are the ne'er-do-wells. They think he's the man from Toronto who they need to do a job. So he goes into the house and he starts making small talk and he's taking things out of his grocery bag. And these ne'er-do-wells are staring and they're looking at the stuff that he's taking. And they see him. There's a joke here that's not really funny, but he pulls out a bottle of KY jelly. You know what KY jelly is for. You know, Kevin Hart is like, yeah, I'm gonna have a wild weekend with my wife. And he's making sexual references about what he's gonna do to his wife. Meanwhile, the ne'er-do-well is looking like, oh, you about to do some messed up stuff. He thinks he's talking in code. You about to do some messed up stuff in this job that I got you for. Now let's pause right here and let's go and actually go to the man from Toronto. The actual man from Toronto, Woody Harrelson, we see him in the opening scene preparing durian. And if you know anything about durian, it has a strong flavor and even stronger scent. And it has a weird texture. For me, I don't think I've ever had durian because I've been too intimidated by the smell. But I think from the texture, it's a white fleshy fruit. Well, it's a prickly fruit on the outside that you cut open, excuse me, to find these pods of this white fleshy substance that, again, emits a strong smell and has an interestingly strong taste. And anyway, so you cut open the durian and you scoop out the soft fleshy stuff that you're supposed to eat and you prepare it however you want to. You can eat it raw or you can fry it up like the man from Toronto is doing, Woody Harrelson's character, while he's talking to the handler who's giving him a job at this particular house in PA. the house where Kevin Hart is mistakenly at because he thinks it's his Airbnb. Anyway, and he still has not called. I keep yawning. He still has not called the owners to confirm because he ain't paying attention to nothing. I guess his, you know, reasoning and logic skills are just out the window. Anyway, and his discernment is just gone. He don't have none. Anyway, so the man from Toronto is apparently leaving Toronto having prepared his durian. And he's sharply dressed, or at least chicly dressed in like all black. And he's got this wide brim hat that's kind of cool. Like, I do appreciate the wardrobe. It's kind of cool. I really like it for the hat. Anyway, I don't even know what kind of hat you call that, but his costume is the wardrobe for Woody Harrelson is pretty cool. And the wardrobe for Kevin Hart, because again, he's supposed to be an everyday man. It's just kind of meh. It's kind of mid. Anyway, so I'm skipping some scenes, but let me just, get on. So anyway, Kevin Hart is escorted down to the basement by what he believes is to be his Airbnb if you're the guest, hosts, his Airbnb host. Anyway, and this is at the point where he's like, oh shoot, something's messed up. There's a guy here. And he learns in this moment that they think he's the man from Toronto and that he's supposed to, the man from Toronto's skill set is to torture people to get something out of them, either information, money, or just to torture them. He's a hired gun. It doesn't really matter for him. And so the bad guys think that he's the man from Toronto. So he plays along and he just starts screaming and doing dumb stuff and blah, 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 blah. So this thing is happening. Meanwhile, the actual man from Toronto shows up to the cabin. Let me just pause. He's on his way to the cabin. Go back Kevin Hart's character's name. Teddy. So we flash forward back to Teddy, who is playing the man from Toronto and is just screaming and acting stupid. And the man that he's supposed to be torturing is so scared that he ends up giving the information that that the bad guys needed. And they end up shooting him or something like that. And somehow or another, the house that they're in blows up. And it blows up in time for the actual man from Toronto to see it, to arrive and see that the house is blown to bits. And before the house is blown to bits, the bad guys send a message to the handler saying the thing has been sorted. And thanks for a job well done. And thanks for sending the man from Toronto. And so, what do I want to say here? And it's at this point where the actual man from Toronto is like, that wasn't me. And the handler's like, whoa, whoa, what? And so the man from Toronto goes on a quest to uncover who the heck is perpetrating as him. Meanwhile, the FBI has been on their trail, I guess, and was already on the scene, like after the explosion happened, and scoop up Teddy. And that scene where you see in the trailer where he's like talking about this suave FBI agent who cannot protect his wife because he's too good looking or whatever, that scene from the trailer, that happens. He's not witness protection, but he's used as a pawn because apparently they've been trying to get the man from Toronto and that whole network for a while now, and they're going to use Teddy to kind of close the deal. So blah, blah, blah. They make him continue to pose. The FBI makes him continue to pose as the man from Toronto. And so he does so. And again, because nobody's ever seen him, some more ne'er-do-wells who are endeavoring in an even bigger plot an even bigger plot to overthrow a South American government and kill their president, hires the man from Toronto to get some other codes that he needs in order to make this thing happen. Apparently, there's some sort of bomb that can go off, that will go off if these ne'er-do-wells have both pieces of the code. And so I won't tell you what the code is. You're just going to have to watch it. Or the second piece of the code is, and piece is the operative word here, but you'll just have to watch it to know more. Anyway, so blah, blah, blah. There's a certain point where although Teddy is being trailed by the FBI agents who have him wired, he actually slips on accident. He slips with the bad guys. He slips their tail and ends up getting on a plane to a South American country, and the man from Toronto gets on the same plane, and then this is where they're linked, and hilarity ensues and blah blah blah. They go on this adventure and they get the other piece of the information, but while they're getting this other piece of the code that the bad guys want so that they can blow up this South American president, while he's giving an address, another assassin, a man from Miami, is called to try to take out the man from Toronto. And then after a certain point, a man from, is it Tokyo? And a man from Duluth or something like that, some Midwestern city, is also called. And so blah, 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 some assassins are coming to get the other piece of the code and kill the man from Toronto because the handler believes that he's gone off his rocker. And blah, blah, blue. They come to find out the man from Toronto realizes that the handler, who he thought up until this point was his friend, has sent these assassins to take his life and then to take his place. And so this is the moment where the man from Toronto decides, I want out. And so he just wants to get his money, get out so that he can open his restaurant where he can serve durian all different ways. And so hilarity ensues, more shoot 'em up, bang, bang, shoot 'em up, bang, bang. There's a moment where Teddy's wife leaves him, which is in a melodramatic, weird way, because apparently he lost his job at the gym because he was bad at marketing. And he did not tell his wife, because he didn't tell her at the beginning. He actually lost his job at the beginning of the film and before they went on the birthday trip, and he never tells her. And so she gets mad and decides to leave. And again, a very melodramatic way. And so he's going to make it up to her by being a good guy and helping the man from Toronto, I guess. I don't know what his plan was. But anyway, so more hilarity ensues. Shoot him up, bang, bang, shoot him up, bang, bang. In the end, something happens to the handler and all the other assassins. And then something interesting happens to the man from Toronto, as well as, well, we don't really know what happens really with, Teddy and his wife, other than they get back together. But we don't really know where his career's gone. I mean, I guess we do kind of know, like, he's found some success in his career, but we don't really know. The story ends on a high note, I will say that. The movie ends on a high note, but there are a lot of loose ends, like in terms of the FBI being on the man from Toronto because they knew he was an assassin and they were trying to get the whole ring. But in the end, the assassin, the man from Toronto, essentially goes free in some weird little way that's not really explained. And so maybe when you watch it, you'll understand a little bit better. But I confess that I fell asleep twice throughout the film and I had to restart the parts where I fell asleep. But I definitely don't remember. I did not fall asleep toward the end, and I don't remember how he got out of that to be able to not, I don't know. Anyway, y'all watch it and you see. You'll see for yourself what the ending is actually like, and maybe you can make sense of it. Anyway, but that's The Man from Toronto. It's not a spectacular film. I don't think it's as terrible as IMDb or Actually, I would probably just give it a 5, like a 5.5. But I would not rate it at 23%. I don't think it's a terrible film. I think it has very funny moments. I think there's lots of action in it that is interesting. I think there's a lot of... What I will say is that everybody is pretty well sharply dressed. All the assassins are sharply dressed. And totally underutilized. Like, the only person that is fully utilized is the man from Toronto. The man from Miami just looks like a... His style is... I don't like his style, but it's fitted well. It's fitted to his body type, which is half the battle. The man from... I think it was Hong Kong? Or was it Tokyo? I think the man from Tokyo. Let's just call it Tokyo. I think the man from Tokyo, he was in all black, so it's hard for you to understand his dress, but, like, his face was pretty, and he looked well put together. The man from Duluth just looked like a mountain man, so there was nothing really. He just was a well-dressed mountain man. Like, he had all the right gear to be a mountain man, and it just looked clean. That's about the best I'm going to be able to give you on that one. But everybody else was, like, sharp. And I think they went out of their way to make Woody Harrelson look kind of svelte and, like, tough. You know what I mean? Because he doesn't exactly have a tough face. And so they had to toughen him up by that whole sharp angles and black and that. But yeah, outside of that, I don't know what the heck they were doing with Kevin Hart's wardrobe. It just was atrocious. Atrocious. And his wife's... the woman that played his wife, her outfits weren't too terribly great either. The best thing that they had going for her was her face, which you can't mess with face card, and her hair, which you can't mess with face and hair. You know what I mean? Like, if you got it, you got it. But outside of that, they weren't too terribly interesting. But it was a Netflix film, so, you know, you deal with it. Yeah, that's really all I got on the film. It was interesting. It was a little bit funny. It was mostly just something to watch, to be honest with you. Because a lot of the other things on Netflix are kind of a little bit of a drag. I'm not watching Stranger Things, y'all. I'm not doing it. For what? The only thing that I've seen from this... the only thing that I've seen from this season of Stranger Things is this TikTok sound that keeps floating around. It's like a Tammy, wake up, Tammy, wake up. Whoever is doing it, it has a nice singing voice. But yeah, people are using this as an alarm when something is weird and they want to get out of there. That and I want to go home, that sound. If you're on TikTok, you've heard that sound too. It almost sounds like a little child singing. I think it actually is a little child singing that. But yeah, the only thing I've seen of Stranger Things is that little clip of that person making that sound, singing that song, which is actually not a song. It's literally he's put some lines in one of the episodes and made it into a song. But anyway, so I watched The Man from Toronto because apparently it was a number one movie. It was one of the top 10 movies. So I'm like, let me watch it. I'm not watching Stranger Things, so let me watch this. Maybe it'll be interesting. Turns out it wasn't that interesting, but it was exciting in points. So anyway, if you don't want to watch a film that requires you to do a lot of thinking, and if you want a little bit of fun and you want to laugh, watch this movie. Don't have a lot of high expectations. It's not going to meet them. It's going to do the very bare minimum, but it will help you pass the time and it will allow you to laugh a little bit. So that's that on that. What did I want to say? Okay, so let me just switch gears. So there was something that I wanted to talk about earlier. Because I've just been consuming media it's the end of the fiscal year, at my job, and I'm the one that's in charge of crunching a whole lot of numbers on the program side, meaning literally program, as in a class or a program, not computer software program, but you know what I mean? Anyway, so I've got all this data to crunch, and I had a lot of it to do. I did a lot after the holiday. I started to do some for the holiday break, and then I did more after the holiday break, and I'm not finished because quarterly reports are coming due. And so I have to get all of this stuff out. And anyway, so I've just been watching stuff while doing that. Don't ask me why. That's just therapeutic for me to watch films and then do data. And believe it or not, it actually is accurate because I have to triple check it before I submit it, because our annual report is riding on these numbers. So so I'm doing that and I'm watching shows. And so I watch The Man from Toronto. I also watch parts of Alone. The 8th season of Alone, not the current season that's out right now. I do need to finish that. I watch a documentary over the early years of Basquiat, which maybe I'll talk about at a later point. I also watch a documentary over Halstead, which was really depressing. But really similar in a lot of ways, because what do a lot of people do? They move to New York and reinvent themselves. And so he went from Halstead in Iowa to Halstead in New York, and then adopted an accent. And so maybe I'll talk about that at a later point. But the episode, the thing that I wanted to talk about, which I'm glad I don't have a whole lot more time to talk about it because it's just so doggone disturbing. The documentary Crazy Love, which I watched when I must have watched 5 or 6 years ago. But watching it now, it turned my whole stomach. Google Crazy Love and tell me if it doesn't, the plot of the thing, if it doesn't turn your stomach. This is true. The events of Crazy Love actually happened. This is a documentary. It is not a movie. My stomach turned watching that. I remember being more thinking that the people involved were more vile than I originally thought. I don't have much words for this documentary. For the people who were the interviewers, for the subjects, I don't have any words. Google it. I've never been so insulted in my life. How can I say this? I have never felt so offended in my life behind a piece of media. I've been offended before. I've been disgusted before. I have never been so offended and sick to my stomach before than watching something a second time. Never a second time am I more disgusted than the first time. This is the first time I've been more disgusted the second viewing. And with the passage of time between the first one and the second, again, I watched this 5 years ago. But seeing it now, my stomach is turned. And I just watch it, learn about it. I can't even accurately describe how I feel other than sick. So anyway, watch it and leave me a message if you've watched it or if you have any thoughts about it, because it's not great. It's not great. It's wild. Anyway, yeah, that's it for now. I don't know what I'm going to talk about next week. There's just so much news happening right now, both locally. Well, I know next week is Centennial Boule for my sorority. So I will likely be recording on the day, I will be recording on the day from day 3 of my sorority's Centennial Boule. This is 100 years for Sigma Gamma Rho. This is a big deal Boule, biennial conference for the sorority. Going all out, like, what a time to be alive if you're a woman of Sigma Gamma Rho Sorority Incorporated. What a time. What a time to be alive. Or if you're an affiliate of the sorority, what a time to be alive. So I'm probably going to talk a bunch about that and any other observations. I don't know how long the show is going to be. It might be a quick little blip. Or what I might do is record about something else and then also give a little special snippet exclusively about our boule. And just ruminations, or just reflections rather, of the significance of the time. So as to not bore everyone to tears who doesn't give a crap. Anyway, so we'll see. I'll see what I end up doing. But thank you so much for listening today. Me ramble about a bunch of different things. If you're from the UK, I want to know what you think. Please, please, please. I want to know what you think about Boris Johnson. Good riddance. Or are you nervous for who's going to take his place? What other ne'er-do-well is going to take his place? You know what I mean? Like, is the next person up going to be worse than Boris? Is that what you're thinking? Who knows? Certainly what I would be thinking. But anyway, want to hear from you. Appreciate you for listening. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for rating and reviewing this thing. 4 or 5 stars. You doing that very act helps to expand the reach of the show. Get it, get more ears listening to it. And I just appreciate you for that. Because you don't have to do it. But if you do it, I appreciate you. And I do want to read your comment if it's positive. If it's not, you can keep it, like, give it to somebody else or just not do it. But thank you so much for paying attention to this show. Thank you so much for spending your time. I hope I was able to help you finish whatever project you were trying to finish. I know the feeling, my dear. Take care of yourself. There's a lot of wild things happening. There's a lot of stuff that can draw your attention and be triggers for you. Dig deep, find your resilience, get another therapist if the one that you got ain't doing the trick. Take care of yourself. You're the only you we got, and we need you. So, once again, thank you so much for listening. Have a great day, or evening, or morning, whatever time you're listening to this. Until next time.